This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Planning on watching the Super Bowl this weekend?
I am. I'm rooting for the Ravens. What about you guys? Checker, you don't watch football, do you?
What's the Super Bowl?
Now, here's your host.
Hello, this is your host, Dara Z. Handelar of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, a role reversal I could never fill Mike Petrelli's shoes, but I'm going to try, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my esteemed, it seems odd to say co-host, but it's true, Checker Finn.
Well, I'm not feeling terribly hospitable, so I don't think I'm hosting anybody for anything, but I am here to harass and heckle the substitute moderator. Thank you, Dara.
I'm standing by for heckling. Without further ado, it's now time to play Pardon the Gadfly. Question number one.
Senator Tom Harkin, an Iowa Democrat who is regarded as perhaps the most powerful lawmaker in U.S. education policy, will not seek re-election in 2014. What will this mean?
Checker?
Well, it's a very interesting opening in Congress for all sorts of possibility. Of course, it will depend on who wins the majority in the Senate in 2014. And it will, if assuming the Democrats win again, it will hinge hugely on who takes over from Senator Harkin. I mean, the next ranking member right now is Patty Murray from Washington State. But if she chairs another committee, which seems likely, we could be treated to the spectacle of Bernie Sanders, the rather eccentric independent socialist from Vermont, taking over the Senate Help Committee. In any case, Senator Harkin has been a major roadblock on changing anything in anything, including No Child Left Behind and special ed and on and on. I think a fresh start is very welcome. I also think that this probably means, this could well mean, that thing reauthorizations we've been waiting for, like No Child Left Behind, may in fact not happen in the new Congress that is just commencing, but may indeed have to await the 2014 election and the next Congress.
Is there a worst case scenario, somebody else stepping in or somebody winning control, where things could actually get worse?
Well, I know how they could get better, which would be to have a Republican Lamar Alexander, the ranking member, take over as chairman. He actually knows something on the subject and actually cares about it. The worst case would probably be Bernie Sanders. I think he would like the federal government, I'm just putting words in his mouth here, to take over American education.
Let's move on to question number two.
Last week, the Obama administration declared that public schools nationwide must offer sports options to students with disabilities or risk their federal funding. What's the story there?
Thoughts?
Well, our colleague Mike Petrilli has raised an enormous ruckus this week with a blog post accusing the administration, this is specifically the Office for Civil Rights at the Education Department, accusing them of mandating what he calls wheelchair basketball in every one of America's public schools. He's at least three quarters right that the Office for Civil Rights, in putting out guidance that they were encouraged to put out by the GAO, has in fact potentially created a huge cost and a huge complexity for how we operate public education in America at a time when we surely cannot afford huge costs. The language talks about things that school districts should do by way of including disabled kids in all manner of extracurricular programs, including sports. Just the other day, I asked a former superintendent how he and his school system would have responded to guidance from the Office for Civil Rights using the word should. And his response was, I would only ask, how high do they want me to jump? In other words, this may not be so voluntary as the administration would have us think. And if it's not, it's going to be very expensive.
Do you think there's a risk, perhaps, of schools or districts completely eliminating programs if they know that they can't afford to have certain students participate? They can't afford to start a wheelchair basketball team, that instead they eliminate basketball altogether?
It's an excellent question. This is the kind of issue schools have faced with Title IX, of course, proposing requiring really equal treatment of girls and women. in educational institutions. Yeah, this could lead to the disappearance of basketball. Probably not in Indiana, but probably a lot of places around the country would part with it rather than incur the expense. I mean, they're laying off gym teachers and coaches and art teachers and so on right now in response to budget constraints. I don't see how even the dreamers and the enforcers at OCR can imagine that school systems are going to find the wherewithal to do this. And if they don't do this, they're in trouble. They could risk their current federal funding.
Do you think it's an overstep to say something like this, that you risk your federal funding, or are they just trying to do a better job of enforcing laws that already exist?
Well, the problem with enforcers, who also have their hand on the tiller when it comes to the money from Washington, is that those on the receiving end always assume that something bad will happen to them if they don't. So the enforcers have to consider the real world effect of what they're doing. And I suspect that's exactly what they did do on purpose. And therefore, I do think it's an overstep. I think this is I should also add that there's no congressional or legislative or statutory underpinning for this this guidance. There is a GAO report saying districts are confused as to what they must do for their disabled students when it comes to extracurricular activities. And this is allegedly, purportedly, in an effort to reduce their confusion.
See, and this is why we switched. And you're in the hot seat and I'm in the host seat.
And it's really hot over here, but keep right on going. It's fun.
Question number three.
Teachers at Garfield High School in Seattle, Washington, have decided to boycott the state's mandated Measures of Academic Progress test. Is that a good idea?
Our colleague Mike Petrilli again has a stunning blog post on this very topic in this very week's Gadfly Daily, which everybody should, of course, flypaper, we call it. Everybody should, of course, read for themselves. The issue with these teachers in Seattle is that, as best we can tell, this is totally hypocritical and disingenuous on their part. They claim they are boycotting this test because they don't think that kids should be subjected to so much testing. There is ample reason to believe that what they're really doing is protesting a new Seattle requirement that student performance on tests like this play a teeny weeny role in teacher evaluations. And we know that teachers don't like that. So I wouldn't particularly object to their boycotting the test if they would admit that this was out of fear for their own jobs. But to claim that it's in the best interest of the students is hypocritical, disingenuous, and pretty appalling.
I think we should leave it at that. Very strong statement. That's all for Pardon the Gadfly. Now let's move on to everybody's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Hi, Amber. Welcome back.
Thanks, Dara. How you doing?
I'm good. You planning on watching the Super Bowl this weekend?
I am. I'm rooting for the Ravens. What about you guys? Checker, you don't watch football, do you?
What's the Super Bowl?
49ers. I'm a California girl.
Oh, forgot about that. I'm Redskins, but I'm a kind of traitor now. I'm going to the Ravens, which is there's a big piece in the Post today about whether as a legitimate Redskins fan, you can be a Ravens fan. So.
As a legitimate Dodgers fan, I feel like being an Angels fan is perfectly okay. So there's my two cents.
A plague on both your houses.
What do you have for us today?
So we have a new study out by UC and Dartmouth researchers called The Case of College Coaching in New Hampshire. Basically, analysts ask whether assigning a college coach plus offering a cash incentive to high school kids late in their senior year impacts their college going and persistence in college. Okay. They target 12 large high schools in New Hampshire and identify, with the help of the guidance counselors, which students have expressed interest in college but have taken few or no steps to apply. Then the students are randomly assigned or not to the coaching intervention, so it's a gold standard study. And the intervention includes college application mentoring from a Dartmouth student, payment for their application and college testing if they haven't taken the ACT and whatnot, and $100 to complete the application and filing process. Okay. 47% of the treatment group incidentally did not participate, which is important. Analysts find no statistically significant impact on the program for men, but do find one for women that amounts to a 12.1 percentage point increase in their college going rate. This is compared to a mean control group college going rate for women of 52%. Okay. But when they look look only at those women who completed the treatment, so because we got, you know, a lot of people that didn't, the impact rises to 24 percentage points. So not too shabby. When analysts examined persistence in college for women only, so now it also looked at persistence, they find that it was about 12 percentage points higher than the control group of women. Also good news. Incidentally, they find that offering the cash bonus alone without mentoring has no impact on outcomes. And then they close by discussing the reasons why the program might have had no impact on men. And they conclude that the returns for even some college is greater for women than men, according to all these various survey data. And they also find that men responded negatively to the program, which they took as meaning that they're less capable, while women see the program as compensating for some personal lack of confidence. So we've got some behavioral stuff in here. Still in all, some handholding during one senior year with college applications appears to make all the difference with some young folks.
Did they, when they looked at persistence, were they looking at that same group? So the students that they gave the mentoring and coaching for, they followed them over course of this
period?
They
followed them. That lovely database that we need to get, we sort of need to get our hands on, the National Student Clearinghouse that was started a few years ago, apparently is now tracking college going rates for every kid in the country. Wow. You got to have some money, I think, to get your hands on it or be a client or something or so something.
The persistence point is interesting, more to me than the college going piece, because I can easily see how some mentoring and somebody else to pay the fees for you and help you fill out the forms might help you finish the application process, particularly if you don't have that kind of backup or resources at home. I mean, there are a lot of sort of first generation college goers for whom this would make a difference. But wouldn't necessarily, unless the intervention continues, wouldn't necessarily cause them to persist in college after they get there.
They did actually look at a year. Okay, I could have gone on forever. You guys know how hard I have a hard time with the minute part of this program. But they did follow up after a year or two and still found that they were persisting as well as a typical New Hampshire college student. Not necessarily compared to the comparison.
After a year. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I also have a somewhat obnoxious, irreverent, and sexist comment about the guys.
Bring it on, please.
Who exactly were those mentors? Had they tried attractive women as mentors?
You know what's really funny is they actually looked into that because so many people said maybe if you'd paired the man with a woman, you might have seen something. And they found no difference when they looked at whether a man was compared to a man or a woman or...
And its influence on these high school guys.
That's right. Make no difference.
They're just hopeless, those high school guys. They don't belong in college, is my conclusion.
Yeah. But, I mean, what's this of the some college has higher returns for women than men? I wasn't actually familiar with that research. But, you know, it made me think of my mother who's got a high school degree, no college. But she fared pretty well in this world. You know, she got a job in operations as a sort of a manager of an office, continued to climb the ladder. And it made me think, I wonder if my dad could have done the same thing, you know, in terms of faring pretty well without a college.
And has the situation changed in recent years in terms of the jobs available today?
That's right.
For people coming out of college. We don't hire many people here who haven't gone to college, hard to know.
That's right.
Well, thank you to Amber and Checker. Until next week, I'm Darzy Handelar.
And I'm Checker Finn at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Signing off, have a great week.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.